Welcome. Today, Dr. Wells is going to be talking about general health and how to optimize your health, and she'll also be sharing a recipe for a salad and talking about the right greens for salads.
We are, as you use, know that we are the good stewards of the earth. But we totally forget that we need to be good stewards of our own personal ecosystem. Now, I'm sitting here before you, and it's all really quite obvious. I'm Dr. Terry Walls, the mother of the boy Wonder.
Yes.
and I've been very proud of that boy.
Yeah, that's impressive.
However, I have a billion brain cells that have to cooperate, play nice, communicate well in order for me to be effective as a person, as a mom, as a UU person. And I have a trillion cells in my body. And each of those cells have their own unique life to live, to give, to die. And they all must live, die, cooperate in order for me to go around and be the good mom, be the good you, be the good doc that hopefully I am. And it gets even more compelling in that I have 100 trillion bacteria, yeast, and parasites living on my skin, in my mouth, in my intestines, on my genitals. So I am outnumbered 100 to 1. I may be here as an individual, as Terry, but my effectiveness as a steward of that ecosystem will determine whether or not I'm in the wheelchair or if I'm able to walk and bike and have a rich and full life. For 2 million years, we ate a lot of green leaves, roots, a few fruits, and meat, fish, poultry, we could catch it, eggs in the spring. 10,000 years ago, we began eating grain. About 8,000 years ago, dairy, and maybe 6,000 to 8,000 years ago, beans and legumes. That's a very short time period. But when we changed what we ate, different bacteria began to grow in our bowels. And when we have those new bacteria, they digest our food and they digest each other's byproducts. And those byproducts diffuse into my bloodstream, where they either help, as in vitamin K, or they screw up my biology and make me more depressed, more likely to be diabetic, more likely to have heart disease, more likely to have a severe weight problem, more likely to have an autoimmune problem. So, what I'm going to talk with you about over these next 5 weeks is getting your diet closer to what your ancestors ate for 2.5 million years. Closer to the kind of food that your DNA is used to eating, and closer to the kind of food that the 100 trillion bacteria, parasites, and yeast that had co-evolved with us for almost 2 million years were used to eating, so you can get your old friends back. So, you know, the first thing I always have to say is the FDA has not evaluated any of the claims or statements made by me in this presentation, on my website, in my books, nor are any of my claims intended to diagnose, cure, treat, or prevent any disease. Because here in the U.S., only FDA-approved things like that, drugs, devices, diets, can make such claims. I'm here to tell you about how you can optimize the health of your cells and the health of your ecosystem so you can enjoy the best health possible. The Walls Diet recommends 9 cups of vegetables and fruit every day, which is more than what the American Dietetics Association recommends, which is 5 to 9. The nutrient score, this is just a quick overview, and as I go through these numbers, think about what you eat and what your family eats, what you see your kids eating. And this is how many nutrients there are per calorie. So the highest score you can get is 1,000, and the lowest score you get is 0, although I frankly think there should be negative scores. And so you start out with 1,000 for mustard greens, and mine froze, so a little limp here, kale, and more kale, which is why if you ask me what's a good thing to be eating, kale and mustard greens will always be a good answer. At 700 is romaine, spinach, and leaf lettuce. At 480 is parsley. Then you get down to the sweet red and green peppers at 420. Clams, oysters, and mussels at 330, or probably 380. Cabbage family, kohlrabi, turnips at 330. Cranberries and aronia berries, very tart fruits at about 230, 240. Strawberries at 212. Blueberries, black raspberries are at 130 and 190. Iceberg lettuce, 70. A peach, 70. It's quite good for you, but it's so sweet and yummy, that's why the score has dropped. Tuna and salmon are at 40. Lean cuts of hamburger, chicken, beef, pork, lamb are at 27. Now, it's still very important to have high quality protein, but they have far fewer minerals, far fewer vitamins. Now we get down to foods that are what Americans are eating. Pasta with red meat sauce is 18. Bread, whole grain, or white with enriched flour is 18. A Big Mac cheeseburger is 16. Mexican food in the restaurants are 15. Milkshakes, malts, frozen yogurts are 11. French fries at 7. A sports drink with added vitamins around 5. Sodas, even the artificial sweeteners, would all, of course, be 0. Most Americans are eating at 20 points and less. That's why we can't do the biology of being a body very well. Our cells are starving for the building blocks necessary for life, and that gets you into trouble. So I'm going to very quickly highlight what your brain needs, and then we'll tell you how to find that in your food. So you have, you know, 1 billion brain cells, 10 trillion connections, and lots of wiring. That wiring needs to be insulated so the message gets to the right place. If you don't have insulation on the wiring in your home, you get an electrical fire and you lose your house. If you don't have myelin in your brain, you get thought fires. You have learning disabilities, irritability, anger problems, impulsivity, violence, aggression. And 90% of us are eating so poorly, we're missing important ingredients for making myelin. And those ingredients are omega-3 fatty acids. So you want to have more omega-3 fatty acids. This is a very nice, it's a combination flax oil and barrage oil. So it has some of the essential fats that your brain needs. You want to reduce corn oil, soybean oil. Those are only omega-6s. And when we make our salad, we'll be using the twin oils for that. And you need to have more of your meat be grass-fed. Corn-fed meat is high in omega-6, low in omega-3. Corn-fed meat is part of the problem. Grass-fed meat is much, much healthier for your brain. You need a lot of B vitamins. Thiamine, folate are green leaves, which is why we're going to be making salad tonight, so you can have those green leaves. And you need a lot of minerals, which is why we're going to have salad, because you need all those minerals. B12. How many of you have had liver this week? All right. Very good. B12 is very abundant in liver. Our ancestors knew you should have liver once a week. And the fact it's a great source of B12, coenzyme Q, which as you get older, you can't make as much coenzyme Q. So organ meat once a week is very good. I've learned how to make liver jerky. Fabulous. I have some of that almost every day. It's so good. Okay, neurotransmitters. So you're going to eat. We're going to teach you how to eat for your good wiring. Then for the brain cell to talk to the next brain cell, it has to release special molecules called neurotransmitters. I give those kind of drugs to boost neurotransmitters to my depressed people. But if they don't fix their diet, they still can't make the neurotransmitter. You need B vitamins, greens, and you need sulfur, sulfur-containing vegetables to make those neurotransmitters. So green leaves, mushrooms, cabbage, kale, onion, garlic family, asparagus are the things you want to be eating. Mitochondria are what powers your brain. It actually powers all of our organs. Most of us don't know how to eat for a mitochondria, but it comes down to green leaves, sulfur, and bright color. So we'll be talking more about that. So very big picture. You need 9 cups of vegetables, green, sulfur, color. You need a source of omega-3s. So fish, grass-fed meat. You need minerals. That's your greens. You also need to get some iodine, so that's going to be seaweed and powdered kelp. And we'll give you a quick tour of my yard. So a plateful of greens, think green back. Those are your B vitamins, A, C, and K. It's a good source of minerals. And for a point system, that's between 480 and 1,000 points. So every day, you take this plate, you cover it with green leaves, so you can't see the plate. You put on some omega-3 salad dressing, and then you eat it. But not the plate. Okay? That's how many greens you should have.
Just once a day?
I do it 3 times myself.
Okay.
That's too easy.
Yeah.
Then sulfur foods. You want to have something in the onion family, something in the cabbage family or mushroom family. These are, I should say, you know, green leaves are incredibly easy to grow. Put them in a pot, put them in your yard, very easy to grow. And very inexpensive. You plant some kale in the spring as soon as you can work the soil, and you'll have green leaves all year long until very hard frost. And I put onions around my trees as opposed to hostas, so then we can have onions year-round. And I inoculate my garden soil with mushrooms, so we have mushrooms throughout the year. And I've inoculated some logs. So mushrooms are very easy to grow. If you don't have a yard, you can still get a mushroom kit and grow mushrooms in your house. Very fun. And colors. Now, if you have access to any kind of land, a little bit of sunshine, you could put in some raspberries. They're very hardy. Mulch them heavily. And then 2 weeks out of the year, you pick raspberries every other day. And they're really quite yummy. Blackberries are likewise very rigorous. Blueberries are a little bit more tricky to grow, but very, very good for you. Red is very good for your eyes. That's not just orange. You need to have red for your eyes. And it's very good, of course, for removing the trash. You've probably heard of resveratrol. There are more and more studies saying resveratrol is fabulously good for your brain. That's why you want to have a cup of something blue-black every day. That could be beets. It could be blueberries, blackberries. It could be purple grape juice, black grapes. And it could be blueberries or aronia berries. I showed you a picture of aronias. Those are chokeberries that are native throughout North America. They've been cultivated. They're like a cranberry. I really like my aronia bushes. I get about, I think, 4 gallon of aronia berries, one bush. And I can wait. They turn black when the bush is weighted down almost to the ground. I can just go out and strip the whole plant in one sitting and put them in Ziploc bags, quart Ziploc bags, and then just freeze them and use them for smoothies. Yes.
How do you spell aronia berry?
A-R-O-N-I-A. And you can get bare root stock from Rain Tree. It's a catalog online. You can call them. They'll ship it out to you in the spring. Dig a hole. You need some sunshine. And it will do very well. It'll probably not give you much of a crop this year, but it'll give you a great crop the following year. Okay, so what do we need to be eating for our brain?
Nine cups?
Vegetables.
Yeah.
So we need
kale.
Kale's always good. So we need lots of greens. Yeah, kale, mustard greens. Have 1,000 points. Those are really, really good for us.
Yeah.
You need a lot of sulfur. So good sources of sulfur, ladies and gentlemen.
Garlic,
onions, mushrooms. Now, in general, I say it's a cup. Or I'm wanting you to get a cup of stuff. You don't need a cup of garlic. One clove of garlic would be the equivalent of a cup of mushrooms. Because the garlic is such a potent source of sulfur. Okay, so 3 cloves of garlic would get you your 3 cups of sulfur. Okay?
It's getting easier.
Yeah, it's sounding a little easier. And you get a nice heaping plate of greens. You put 3 cloves of garlic on there.
Now it's heaping.
Absolutely. My type, mine is just like so heaping. It's about that. And the color. So yellow-orange is good. Red is good, and blue-black is good. If you're diabetic or you have issues with weight, you want to do this as vegetables. And instead of having your starchy vegetables cooked, have your starchy vegetables raw. So take your sweet potato and you grate it as a salad. And your beets, you grate them as a salad. If weight's not an issue, then yes, you can have your starchy vegetables baked. And you'd have some more fruits. I'm a big, big proponent of berries. Berries are so incredibly good for us.
Frozen berries are
fine.
They're not very high on your list.
So there's not, and let me stress, for the most nutrition, green leaves. If you want the most health, you're going to really stress green leaves. And so when I had my recovery, I was having a plateful of kale for breakfast. And then for lunch, I had another plateful of kale. And then for supper, I had 2 platefuls of kale. And I'd have a little bit of meat on the side. And I'd have craisins and colored things in my salad, but greens were really the bulk of what I ate. And what I discovered is if I cut back on my greens, I have far more restless legs. My legs twitch at night. I can't sleep. I have to get up. I'm pacing around. And I go back to eating kale throughout the day, and my legs are much more comfortable. In my clinical trial, what I see is the people who are eating the most greens are doing the best. Yes.
I don't see apples anywhere in here, and like I love those, so are they really not?
So apples would be in like the peach range.
Okay.
So they're okay. In our little chart, I'm not going to tell you that you can't have them, but you get more nutrition having more greens, more sulfur, more bright color. So in our clinical trial, I tell people it's 9 cups protein, and then if you're still hungry, yes, go ahead and have your apples and bananas, and if you want to have some non-gluten grain, that's fine. Yes.
Do you worry about pesticides on berries?
I try very hard to eat organic. So I worry about pesticides on everything. I worry about pesticides in buildings. The world is getting steadily more and more toxic. And so the more you can reduce your toxic load, the better you are. We will talk about today's theme and sort of the big picture and greens. But I certainly do recommend detoxification strategies. I'm going to show you guys how to make beet smoothies that I think are just fabulous. I love my beet smoothies, and I'm hoping you will as well. Okay. So can we make a salad? Yes? We're okay with that? Okay. So, let's make a little wood space. Okay. Okay. Get this out of here too. Okay, some concepts. Okay. So we have our leftover salad from the savory dinner. And what I'm going to do tonight is take some kale, chop it up, and we're going to mix it in with these greens. When you first start serving kale, so your family may say, like, oh, my God, that is too bitter. It's too uncomfortable, and they won't feel like eating it. So a great way to ease them into this is to just take your regular salad and throw in a couple of kale leaves. Your regular salad will have a score of around 700 if you're getting it with romaine, if you're getting it with spinach. So it's still great for them. And you just throw in a little extra kale. So we'll start with the mustard leaf. Mustard is sort of a nice peppery. It adds just a little bit of zip to it. The advantage to mustard greens in a kale salad is that when you have it has a little bit of heat to it, that cuts the bitterness very nicely. So we're just going to take some of the mustard here and chop it up. And toss that in. Now we're going to... And this is lanceolata kale, so I want you to pass that around. And this is curly kale.
What was the first one?
Lanceolata kale.
Lanceolata?
L-A-C-I-N-A-T-O. It's also called dinosaur kale.
Huh.
And this other one is curly kale. There's a sort of a reddish, purplish version of the curly kale. There are many, many different kinds of kale. There is a Russian kale that is not as curly, but has looks sort of like giant oak leaves.
It's all about the same as far as the nutrients.
They're all about the same. And kale is closer to a wild greens. And, you know, I also say that Iowa is filled with edible greens. If you go to the library, you can find a host of books on foraging. And so that's another way to have a lot of fun with your family, is to go out and learn how to do some foraging. Lamb's quarters in green amaranth are escaped culinary herbs. Dandelion is an escaped European herb. So there's lots of edible greens growing probably in your yard if you quit using the pesticides. So there are a couple of observations you can I can make here. So the question is, what about these stems? Do I leave them in or should I cut them out? You can strip them off by just pulling the stem out. And I'll take another one of these, strip a few. And just strip that back out and chop them without the stem. So you're getting the stem out. And then I would simply slice these. I prefer to have my salad minced fairly into small pieces. Part of the reason for that is that the sulfur cross-links and becomes more stable and therefore more effective in your body. So chop it, and I cross-link it again a few more times, and we'll toss that in. Now you can also, alternatively,
did you get all these at New Pie, or are they anywhere?
You can get them at New Pie. You can also get them at Hy-Vee. I was in Fairwood the other day. They're having them there. And actually, it's quite fun. When I'm in many of the produce sections around town, some of the grocers have stopped to say, you know, Dr. Walls, greens are up almost 200% as compared to last year. Yes! That's fair. I mean, that is very exciting. Even the new pies, like, my God, that just keeps, you know, going higher and higher. And there are more and more kale growing in the farmer's market as well. Now, are these from the co-op? Are these organic? I'm not washing these to put them in a salad. Who brought these?
I brought them, and actually, Lori Marshall bought them. And I think she got them at Hy-Vee.
Okay, tell you what, let's wash these.
Now,
beet greens, collard greens, turnip greens, rutabaga greens would all be in the 1,000 category. Arugula is around 700. Watercress would be 1,000. Wintercress would be 1,000. Now, another thing that you can do, which we won't do today, but you can take these, mix them with some vinegar and lime juice and sea salt, and then sort of massage them together, massage them. That will pre-digest them a little bit. They'll be a little more tender. So they're going to be a little more crunchy. Now, when you leave the stems on, it doesn't take as long to make. And let's say it's like having celery, just having things a little bit crunchier. And then I chop them again a little bit more. Yeah. So to mix that in. So we've got our kale mixed in with the existing lettuce. That's probably enough for us to all get a sample here. And then it comes down to the
I'd let them bring up a tablespoon. Could you run down and grab two tablespoons?
Okay. Do you need any more things washed? Or?
No, I asked to get. I'll. Just, you guys, this. Would you like more salad than this? Are we good?
No.
I think we're good. You have to be sure you eat it all. So that's the key part. Okay. Alright.
When you were talking about with the greens, with the vinegar, sea salt, and lime juice, what vinegar do you...
So we can pass this around. Here's some balsamic vinegar. Yeah, so any kind of vinegar that you like.
Okay.
Vinegar is a stimulator of PPAR gamma, which is a good thing for your brain. PPAR gamma helps your brain cells live long, happy lives. Furthermore, it helps you mobilize your belly fat. Also probably a good thing for you. So having 2 tablespoons of vinegar every day is good for your brain cells and really fabulous if you'd like to have a smaller belly.
2 tablespoons.
You could use part of it in your salad.
So you could put it in your salad, you could put it in a glass of water and drink it, or you just have a shot of vinegar. Or you can have less than 2 tablespoons. But the point I'm trying to make is, you know, vinegar is actually pretty good for us. So, now there's a couple more things I was going to show you guys. Here's some ginger. You can pass that around. Ginger, I was going to grate and put in here. Sometimes I've gotten feedback from my family that that's a little too spicy for them. So I won't put that in, but it's a very nice thing, like the mustard greens, to tame the bitterness of the kale. Okay. Garlic. In case nobody knows what garlic looks like, we could pass these around. That's sort of fun. But we have some garlic from downstairs, so we're going to take the easy way.
And that's okay to take the easy way?
Yes, it loses a little bit. And when you first start, I think it's fine to take the easy way, and you can take some fresh ginger as well. Oh, marvelous.
You mean dry ginger is okay?
Dry ginger would be fine, too.
Perfect. Yeah, thank you. It's very helpful.
So, we'll put in a little bit of garlic. And I like garlic, and we're all going to like each other. So, garlic, great source of sulfur. 1 clove of garlic is the equivalent of 1 cup of sulfur. And so you want to have omega-3s. It's not that olive oil is bad for you, but the vast majority of us don't have enough omega-3 in our diet. Therefore, I encourage people to learn how to make salad dressings using a omega-3 oil. Flax oil, when you see it at the store, you'll get sticker shock, like, oh my God, I'm not spending that amount of money. You can think of it as medicinal. You could also decide, you know, flax oil is too expensive, I'm going to get walnut oil instead. Walnut oil doesn't have quite as much omega-3 as flax oil. It has a slightly longer shelf life. But that's another great way to get omega-3 salad dressing. Any of the omega-3s, if you fry them, you destroy the omega-3. And when you fry food, you use up some of the chemical reactions that your body and your brain cells and your mitochondria wanted to use. So raw is best. Actually, raw on the plant is best. Raw soon off the plant is next best. Fresh frozen soon would be next. Steamed, baked is still good. Canned, but you have to drink the juice and you've lost a lot of the nutrients. Dried, if it's dried at less than 105 degrees, is as good as fresh off the plant. And then there's not at all.
Okay. Like fermented.
Fermented is fabulously good for you. Yes.
Where would a salt cracker come in on that?
A slow cooker, if you are on low, that would be like steamed or simmered, and that would be fine. And high would be good, not quite as good as low, but a slow cooker is fine.
So olive oil was, where does it...
So olive oil is good for you. And if you have plenty of omega-3s in your diet, you're eating only grass-fed meats, only wild fish, having olive oil dressing sometimes is fine. So it's not that you can't use olive oil. It's just that I want to be sure you're getting omega-3 oil in your diet.
And olive oil is not omega-3 oil?
No, it is not. It's omega-9.
What about omega-3 cat oil capsules? Is that as good as putting it on your salad?
It's omega-3 capsules, as in fish oil, krill oil, is very good. In my clinical practice, I have people take 2 grams a day. Yes?
I was asking about something allergic to fish, but I teach a vegetable-based DHA. How does that fit in?
DHA. So
what is the
DHA,
oil is that?
DHA is a form of omega-3 oil. It's what your brain uses.
Okay.
It's very good. And krill oil would be another choice. If your brain has to make DHA out of the omega-3 oil, flax oil, or walnut oil, I can make about 10% of that oil into DHA. Fish oil, about 40% of fish oil will be already DHA. So I have to eat 2 tablespoons of flax oil, to be the equivalent of 2 grams of fish oil. So you catch that? 2 tablespoons of flax oil would be the equivalent of 2 grams of fish oil.
I take flax oil capsules, or sometimes I grind up flax seed.
So 2 tablespoons of flax oil is the equivalent of 2 grams of fish oil. And 2 tablespoons of flax seed ground up is equivalent of 3 grams of fish oil. Probably equivalent of 3 grams of omega oil. So that'd be about like a quarter teaspoon of oil. But it may be more readily absorbed. So, I'm going to throw in a bunch of pepper. Back off of the kale and use more spinach, more romaine. And just gradually increase the kale.
Can you use the craisins or raisins? How much dried fruit will equal 1 cup?
Quarter cup. So, how should we try do our... What I'd like to do, I'm willing to clean up my diet, fill out the daily logs, and we'll just see what happens. And that would be very, very, very useful for us to find out. And you may not all be able to get 9 cups, but I do really think you'd be quite surprised at how much better you would feel going gluten-free, dairy-free. Be patient. A few people will feel the headache, feel sort of miserable, and that usually passes. The other thing I'll warn you is that if you go this route, go gluten-free, dairy-free, and after 2 weeks, you're out with your friends, they're having pancakes, and you say, my God, that looks really good. I'm going to have a pancake. Be prepared for a terrible migraine, terrible body aches, flu, malaise, and a rebound of suddenly the inflammation factory going up very high in your body. So if you're going to cheat, I would cheat with a very tiny dose. Because if you cheat with a really big dose of dairy or gluten, and you are gluten sensitive, you'll make yourself extremely ill and feel miserable for several days. Whereas if you could have a test indulgence with a small amount, you'd feel bad for just a day as opposed to potentially a week. Any other?
It seems such, I don't know, a huge challenge to go gluten-free and dairy-free. I don't know why I'm so like, oh, I don't want to do that. I can't do that. That's what's going in my head. And I have many friends that are doing this, and I think, oh, what's up about that? So it's a story I'm telling myself, but it seems difficult.
It's very difficult. The food industry, the food industry has, and the agriculture industry has brainwashed us into thinking we have to get calcium only through milk. Mm-hmm. And for the first 2 million years of our species' lives, we did not have. We only got milk when we were babies nursing. Otherwise, we got all of our calcium through green leaves. Then the food industry learned that by manipulating the salt, sugar, fat content of our food, it causes a dopamine spike, which gives me a lot of attention, a lot of reward, a lot of pleasure. So I'm addicted to white flour, white sugar, high fructose corn syrup, and I'm addicted to cream and butterfat. And there's very little nutrition in white sugar. There's a lot of nutrition in raw milk from grass-fed cows, but the problem with milk is that it's so closely paralleled to gluten that if you're gluten sensitive, you're allergic to milk. And there's emerging data that links the protein in milk to a much higher rate of cancer risk.
And another reason why it'd be so difficult to get off of gluten and dairy is that dairy contains something called caseomorphins, and gluten-containing products contain gluteomorphins, which are actually morphine-like compounds. They are very addictive. And so when you stop eating it, you will possibly experience very strong cravings for them, and that is a form of withdrawal.
Oh, that makes it easier.
Mm. we could really brighten your day.
Yeah.
Yes.
How would the changes in these type of diet affect the insulin basal rates?
So there's a lot, many articles that show if you follow a paleolithic diet, and what I'm teaching you now is basically a paleolithic diet, that the amount of insulin that is needed will drop. If you don't eat sugar, don't eat flour, don't eat the cooked starchy vegetables, it takes a much smaller amount of insulin to maintain a steady blood sugar.
How fast of a rate would I necessarily have to change my basal rate?
You'll have to talk to your physician, and they'll probably have to work with you during that transition.
Okay. I'll find my doctor.
Yeah, I mean, you'll have to work with your physician. You'll have to monitor your sugars, and your physician will have to help you through that. And part of that will depend on the changes that you're making.
Nothing I want to do without talking to Dr. Bruce.
Yeah, I think that would make a lot of sense.
Thanks for listening in to Dr. Walls, and I hope you've enjoyed this.